Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com, or you can go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about what's happening in the world today, and we talk about where we think the world is going. We take a rather unusual view of where we think the world is going. We think the world, as we're going to discuss tonight, is getting better all the time. We think something's going to happen, something wonderful. And we think if you're not excited about the future, you're not paying attention. So we'll be getting into all that a little bit later. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me here in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm pumped up as well. Looking forward to a great show tonight.
This is going to be a fun one because we're talking about our favorite thing, which is good news, and we've
That's
got a
right.
big pile of it that we can that we can work through. So I think we're going to have a good time with that.
If ever there was a time to do a show on Better All the Time, it's after this week. The market being the way it was and everything, it's time for a little good news.
Yeah, there's been some grim news. I mean, there's never a shortage of grim news, we should note, but it does seem like there's just been a lot of gloom and doom, particularly around the markets, and you know, a lot of panic and a lot of people feeling ill at ease. So let's talk some good news tonight. I think that's going to be very refreshing and hopefully get everybody off to a good week coming up. And that's basically the plan. Before we get into that, we can introduce our chat host, Michael Darling. Hello, Michael.
Hey, good evening.
How are you?
I'm great. Got nothing to complain about, nothing at all.
Well, good.
All right. Well, see, he's poised. He's poised to talk some good news, nothing to complain about. We'd probably have to hit the mute button if you started complaining anyway. There was a reference earlier on the call before the broadcast started to someone whining. And I think that, we won't say who it was, but just that we've moved on and there won't be any whining on the program tonight.
This is a wine-free zone tonight.
That's absolutely. We're going to be completely wine-free, W-H-I-N-E. Now, you know, we might get into a nice Cabernet or something like that, but that's a different deal altogether. So just to kick it off, any big sports updates? I was going to boast about the Broncos beating New Orleans, but then you kind of burst my bubble on that one, Stephen, by saying you didn't watch the game and aren't really all that interested. Although I think you're really a huge fan, and this is like your defense mechanism.
That's right. I'm in deep cover as a Saints fan, I guess. But it's congratulations to the Denver Broncos for their win over the New Orleans Saints. I have to brag on the other great Louisiana team, LSU. In their
yes.
victory over Auburn. They were down at the half, 14-3, and then charged back and won it. Very exciting game all the way through. So,
all right, well, good for LSU and good for the Broncos. Just from the NFL standpoint, today was kind of the Speculus Bowl, right? Because we had New Orleans and Denver in the same game. Now, if
that's right,
if University of Colorado ever plays LSU, that also would be a Speculus Bowl,
no doubt,
of sorts. Well, I guess as much as. Seeing as you don't live in New Orleans, I guess really it'd be just as close.
Well, I see Harvey in the chat room says Cubs win. Is that true, Michael?
The Cubs have clinched their division and are guaranteed a first-round playoff appearance, and we're waiting now to see who the rest of the National League teams will be. It's going to be the Dodgers, I think, in the West, and two teams from the East, Phillies and the Mets. That'll round it out, and we're off to the races.
Okay.
Is it just me, or is anybody else getting a little catch in Michael's voice there?
Yeah, he sounds like he's calling from a helicopter.
Maybe you want to hang up and dial back in, Michael. We'll see if we can correct that problem.
All right.
Hopefully, if that's our big audio glitch for the night, then we'll be doing very well.
No doubt, no doubt.
And the show will just continue to improve, getting better,
better
all the time. Now,
that's
I want
right.
to give an update on our most recent coffee mug competition. Last week we said we would give a coffee mug to the person with the best meme. We actually had a caller who came in with a great meme that she wanted to kill, but I decided, well, that didn't actually fit the prize criteria. So even though we valued your input last week, Sally, we're going to give the mug to Mike D, who contributed a meme about memes, which I think is very cool. I'm calling that a meta meme. And we use that actually as our quote of the week in this week's Better All the Time feature. And this is what Mike wrote. He wrote, "The first rule of killing memes is to not talk about the memes you want to kill." And then he goes on and explains, "Memes are like Obi-Wan. If you strike them down, they will only grow stronger." So now, this works for me on a couple levels. First, it works because I think it's completely true. And secondly, he's speaking my language when he quotes a Star Wars at me like that. So I thought that was a great example. Oh, that's I wanted to bring that back around to whining. What was the warning that you gave about whining earlier before the program started, Stephen?
I don't know. oh, that one. Oh, we wanted to go to Tosche Station to buy some power converters. Is that what you're talking about?
I wanted to go to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters. Yeah, one of the great movie whines of all time, Luke Skywalker in the first Star Wars. And then here we have Mike D talking about. We all remember that Obi-Wan's. I mean, most of us probably remember. Anyway, I'm proud to say I remember that Obi-Wan said, "You can't win to Darth Vader if you strike me down. I'll become more powerful than you can possibly imagine." And I think that's probably true, that, in fact, we probably don't want to spend time in the future. We said we'd be talking about memes in the future. In the future, we probably don't want to talk about the ones we want to kill. We want to talk about the ones we want to promote, because
that's right.
we're actually giving attention to the bad ones if we talk about them. And we might kill them, or we might make those who like them all the more likely to defend them, or we might actually introduce the idea to someone who'd never heard it before, and then it takes off on its own through our efforts to get rid of it. So I thought that was a great point, Mike. And if you're listening, you need to drop us a line on the email address that's shown on the Speculist homepage there for emails, and let us know where to ship your coffee mug. So we got a big winner there. And I have an update on our presidential coffee mug competition.
All right.
I figured everybody would.
I'm pumped. Do tell.
Everybody would be excited to hear about that. Well, maybe, Stephen, real quick, if you just want to recap what's going on with that. I don't want to dominate the show here.
Okay. Well, this is a contest between the two candidates that they may not even be aware that they're in. It's
how could they not be?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. After all, the show is listened to by literally tens of people. But anyway, this contest that they're in is whichever candidate lays out the most speculatious plan either a policy proposal or even, I don't know, says something truly geeky between now and the election. We'll win this contest and win this coffee cup, and we'll figure out a way to send them the coffee cup. So, it's a real contest.
This is a real competition, and we really are judging it. Now, I have changed the way it's working just a little bit this week, and here's what I've decided to do. Now, earlier this week, John Tierney published a piece in the New York Times science blog. John Tierney is the official science. I don't think he's the science editor, but he seems to be like the science blogger and like the science expert at the New York Times. So he writes this kind of separate website connected to the New York Times site about science, and he had a rundown on where the two presidential candidates stand on various science issues. So I mailed that out to you and to Michael, and I said, hey, we should take all this into consideration. And then, Stephen, you wrote back with some thoughts, and Michael wrote back with some thoughts. And I got looking at this, and I realized, oh, I see how I'm going to have to do this from now on. So the way this is going to work from here on in is I'm going to be the sole arbiter and judge as to who's winning the presidential coffee mug competition.
Well, and I feel like you're probably the fair judge here Phil, because you're of us three, you are quite clearly the least partisan. So,
thank you very much.
Yeah.
I was gonna give my two reasons, which were one, it's much easier for me, and two, I'm the one ordering the cups. So I thought,
the man who orders the cups gets to
pick, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you guys say. I'm going to send it to whoever I send it to. So,
that's right.
However, I do appreciate your input, and we will continue. You can, of course, take me to task on my conclusions. But I just want to run through these issues because I thought this was really interesting. So this kind of puts additional context on what we've said so far. We talked about where they both stand. Initially, we talked about where they both stand on energy, and the competition really opened with Senator Obama saying some great stuff about what he wanted to do with flex fuels and improving energy policy. We gave him a point for that. John McCain the next week gave his speech, had great things to say about energy. We gave him a point for that. And then working down the list provided by Tierney and a few notes from the two of you on education, both candidates advocate policies to help develop a highly skilled workforce. Now, Senator Obama wants to improve education by giving tax breaks to people for college tuition, wants to improve the Pell Grant program. McCain wants to put $250 million into a program to help states expand online education. I really like the sound of online education, so I like both those programs. They both get a point for that. National security, and again, we're talking specifically where science is concerned. Obama would put his administration on a path to doubling federal spending on basic defense research. McCain also is way in favor of it, but he doesn't get as specific. He says America needs to retain the edge. So I'm going to give 2 points on that one to Obama, one to McCain. On health care, this is kind of a tricky one because it's hard not to get into politics when you start talking about health care. As soon as you introduce these ideas, it immediately sounds like you're advocating a policy position. And I'm actually going to talk about ends, not means here. So, I'm ready to be challenged. But once again, I am the one ordering the mug. Obama wants to ultimately, his plan is universal health care. That is to make sure that there's no one in the country who doesn't receive treatment. And his plan for doing this is via kind of a bottom of tier national insurance program that makes sure that everybody else who doesn't have insurance any other way will get it this way, if I understand it correctly. And if I don't, Michael, you can step in and set me straight. But not talking about the means, talking about the end. Universal coverage, making sure everybody has health care, speculitious idea, absolutely. That's one of the kinds of ideas we talk about, eliminating poverty. We talk about eliminating drudgery work. We talk about fighting aging. And, hey, yeah, everybody in the world, or in the world ultimately, but in this country who needs health care gets it. I'm going to give him a point for that one. Now, McCain is talking about putting some incentives in place for people to get their own health insurance. Okay, so ultimately, this is seen by some as giving employers an incentive to stop providing health benefits. And I actually think this, too, is a worthy end. I think that the separation of employment from health insurance is probably a very decentralized method of moving ahead with health care. So I would give him a kind of an Army of David's point there on that. And so I would give McCain a point, Obama a point on health care. On space, they both say they want to revitalize the space program. McCain wants to develop new technologies to take Americans to the moon, Mars, and beyond. Obama wants to reestablish a White House Space Council to coordinate what's it say here?
I like what
to
Sally
coordinate all the nation's space efforts. I'm sorry?
I was just saying I like Sally's comment in the chat room. She says we'll only get universal health care when we get those nanobots cranked up.
Well, healthy. See, that's ends versus means. Exactly.
There
right.
You go. Exactly.
I believe in universal health care probably via a different mean than government intervention, but I like the idea.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Finally, so anyway, if you add all that up, okay, That I'm sorry. What did I say? So Obama wants to reestablish the White House Space Council, and McCain is talking specifically about going to the moon, Mars, and beyond. I'm going to give McCain an additional point there. Add it all up, and guess what we got?
We have a tie, maybe, or close to it.
We have a tie. Currently, we have a tie. So, as I've said before, I think this is going to all go down to the debates. But I did want to share one story from James Taranto in the best of the web today. Now, I'm getting in the back channel that we might be getting too political. If this sounds like politics, I don't intend for it to. This is I'm talking about whether the candidates are being speculitious in what they're talking about. And
right.
Let me know in the chat room, folks, if you think we don't want to carry on with this contest. What are we getting in the chat room? Looks like
people
are tracking
with the
idea.
No, we're doing okay in the chat room. We're extrapolating on the nanobot medicine.
Yeah. As the way by which we get to universal health care.
Right, okay. So here's the story. Here's the story from Best of the Web. Of course, Wall Street Journal, James Taranto, obviously he's not going to be an Obama-favoring person. So there is going to be a political edge to this, which I'm not as interested in that as I am in kind of the where this puts it. So let me just read this. Okay, a new television ad released Wednesday by Senator Barack Obama's campaign highlights the closure of Corning's plant in State College, Pennsylvania, and accuses Washington, with Senator John McCain's help, of selling out the workers. And Taranto goes on to write, so what did Corning make at the plant? The ad doesn't say, but the AP story does, glass tubes for television sets and computer monitors. And he goes on to write, in modern times, the CRT has given way to superior technologies such as plasma and liquid crystal, which take up less space and provide superior picture quality. This is an enormous blessing to all Americans who watch TV or use computers. It's hard to imagine a more backward-looking position than mourning the decline of the picture tube industry. And then he goes on, and this is where it gets pretty political. What will Obama do next? Promise to restore American supremacy in the manufacture of buggy whips, iron lungs, and floppy disks? Okay, I think that's a cheap shot, and forget that part. What I would say from that is, no points off for Senator Obama feeling the need to, if you want to make the case to keep jobs in the country, and whatever the political argument is there, fine. You make your argument, McCain. You make your argument. The jobs have to go overseas. They have to stay here. Whatever. Here's where he missed an opportunity, right? Here's what I'd like to hear McCain say or Obama say, right? Specifically Obama, since he's the one we're picking on. You know, this is where I'd like for him to talk about how he's going to take all this twice as much money that he's putting into DARPA, which is going to put us back in the lead for make America the leader for computer and video display technologies, right? That's how I want him to frame that argument. I want him to when he's making a case about jobs moving overseas and he's talking about increasing science research. So, Senator, if you're listening, this is just if you want to win the mug, this is how you need to frame these arguments. That's all I'm saying. So, and I think you raise a good point, Stephen, when you say we're looking for who's going to say the geekiest thing between now and the election. I think this is the competition where we're looking for who of these two men is running for the office of geek in chief.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
And whoever establishes with us that he's running for geek in chief, that's going to be the winner of the coffee mug. As we've said, all they have to do is say space elevator, and they're in the running. We also came up with a few others this week. Nanobot, if I hear either McCain or Obama say nanobot, or utility fog, if they mention the technological singularity, if they use the phrase actuarial escape velocity, if they talk about spray-on solar collectors, and if they talk about the holodeck paradox, any of that, if we hear any of that from either of those candidates, boom, they win.
Yeah, exactly. Holodeck paradox. If either of them say that, it's just over. The holodeck
absolutely.
Paradox.
I will purchase the mug and ship it immediately because nobody can possibly come back from the other candidate using that phrase. I think so.
Yeah.
So that's where we are with that. Right now it's a tie, and we've given them both a little, some strategic direction there. So we'll monitor the debates as they come, and hopefully we'll have a further update in coming weeks.
Absolutely.
This is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're going to be talking about good news and our Better All the Time roundup. And if you'd like to join our conversation, we've got a lively chat going on in the OnLive chat room, or you can call us at 347-215-8972. So let's get into talking a little better all the time.
Absolutely.
Now, this is a feature we've been – I was just looking back. I don't know how long we've been doing this, actually. I know we've done 36 of them now, just counting the numbered editions. But I don't know when it started. I think it probably goes back to fairly early days of the blog.
Well, we had talked a little bit about doing it. The same meeting, Phil, when you and I met for the first time at the Rocky Mountain blogger convention or whatever, and we talked about starting Fast Forward Radio. We also talked about ways to, you know, features that we could have within the Speculist, and it wasn't long after that I believe that the first Better All the Time was published. So,
I think that's probably right. So when would that have been, like 4 years ago?
That was 2004, fall of 2004. So that's
okay. So yeah, we're probably right around the fourth anniversary of Better All the Time. And sometimes we've been more prolific getting them out. Sometimes less. For a while, we had replaced Better All the Time with its own standalone blog, which was called L2SI, and it kind of had its own little arc. I think it went out of business about a year ago, but it had run that same kind of news there for a while. And then we brought it back home to the Speculist, and it's been here ever since. And I've been trying for the past, what's it been, probably a month and a half, I've been trying to get one out every 2 weeks. And ultimately, that's my goal, is to do one every 2 weeks. And basically, the idea behind Better All the Time is to provide a roundup of good news that people probably haven't had an opportunity to catch elsewhere. To talk about, you know, we were talking about how there's never a shortage of bleak news, but actually there's actually not a shortage of good news either. You have to filter it out. You have to go look for it.
Right.
And more often than not, the good news comes in the realm of science and technology. That's where we see, I think, the most exciting developments, and I think the really profound changes, the ones that promise to bring unexpected, discontinuous improvements into our lives, are the ones that are coming about. Particularly, you see in medicine, but also in energy, in computer technology, really across the board in science and technology, you see these amazing developments. But we don't limit it to that. So we put in any good news, any story that fits the basic mold of good news can become a Better All the Time story. And we have varied how many we do, but I've got it down now to a science. And we, you know, it's that little picture table holds three rows and three columns of pictures. So nine pictures means we do nine good news stories plus a quote of the week. And
Phil, tell the audience again your inspiration for the title Better All the Time and the concept Better All the Time.
Well, the title and the concept, they come from the book It's Getting Better All the Time, which we referred to, what was that, about a month ago, I guess. We were maybe a little more than that. We were talking about – I can't remember the topic that led to us. Oh, we were talking about the Speculist Essentials.
That's right.
We were talking about the books and the ideas that had most strongly influenced us. And this was a book that John Smart had suggested that I really need to read, and it's called It's Getting Better All the Time. Let me just grab it.
I got my copy as well.
I have it here in my side of the virtual studio. I'm sorry, you were saying?
What I thought was, what's an interesting little anecdote about this book is that, you know, the very fact that it's published sort of goes against the grain. I mean, it's an acknowledgement that bad things continue. Bad things do happen, but if you look at the overall picture, you know, things are getting better all the time. And what I mean by that is that the book itself was published posthumously.
It was posthumous for
Julian
Stephen
Simon.
Moore. For Julian Simon. And
yeah.
Stephen Moore was the author who compiled his work into this format.
Yeah.
I guess my
point is that obviously bad thing, something bad happened to Julian Simon, but that overall, I mean, civilization keeps marching on regardless of the bad things that happen to we individuals. And that march has been an upward march all along. So
absolutely. Well, and what's really cool about this book, and the reason I wanted to reach over and grab the copy is the subtitle is 100 Greatest Trends of the Last 100 Years, and it could just as easily have been 1,000 Greatest Trends of the Last 1,000 Years if one wanted to take the time to look. And Simon was big on actuarial tables, and a lot of the data that's shown in the book, the book is almost all pictures. It's almost all graphs showing how much longer lifespan is, or the extent to which infant mortality has been reduced, et cetera, et cetera. And you can look at those statistics, and you realize that there has been this incredible improvement in the human condition in so many different areas over the last, in his case, he used, you know, the last century, that it's just almost, if you want to be objective about it, inarguable that tremendous improvements are occurring. It's which is not to say that bad things aren't happening, and you know, it's not to say that bad things won't continue to happen or that nothing bad ever happens, but the actual trend is for life to be better, for us to live longer, for us to live healthier, for us to have more and to be freer, and to enjoy a greater understanding of our world than has been available to any previous generation of humanity. And you know,
I just opened the book at random here, Phil. 100 years ago, the maternal death rate, women given dying in childbirth, was 100 times greater than it is today. By in 1950, the maternal death rate was 10 times greater than it is today. By the 1980s, only 1 in 10,000 women died giving birth. And that's just one example in, I mean, this thing's full of examples like that. Since this book was published in the late 90s, the 100 years that they're referring to is basically the 20th century.
Right.
And, you know, decline in violence and everything, even in a century marked by, you know, huge world wars, the decline in violence overall, I mean, just you know, completely slashed as the century wore on. So, remarkable book.
Absolutely. And where I went from that book was a realization that one doesn't have to just collect the big trends and draw graphs of them. If one wants to document the fact the world's getting better all the time, one can grab the individual stories because they're appearing every day. And I actually wish it was my full-time job to do better all the time. I think I would love that. I think I could probably do 4 or 5 a day if time permitted. As it is, I do 9 every other week and feel like I'm
Well, I wish that were your full-time job, Phil. I would be reading your output. If somebody wants to hire Phil to do that full-time,
we got to set something up there to get that going. That would actually
that's right.
That would be cool. But it would in fact be a full-time job for a whole team of people because there are that many amazing positive developments. And I want to start with one. Here's one thing I'm going to do is I'm just going to put the links to the most recent Better All the Times up in the chat room.
Okay.
So our friends in the chat room, did that show up? I don't know that it did.
I don't see a link yet, Phil.
Huh. Try again. Well, it's not letting me.
Okay.
But,
you go ahead and I'll figure out a way to get it done, okay?
Okay, thanks. I'm just going to randomly select some stories from the four most recent Better All the Times, and hopefully we can put those links up there. They're also on the Speculist if anyone wants to just kind of browse through and talk about some favorite ones. But this is from the one dated August 21st. This was Better All the Time number 34, and I did a little story called Spuds of Life, and the headline was Potatoes May Hold the Key to an Alzheimer's Treatment. And the story here is that a virus that infects potatoes works a lot like and looks a lot like one of the key proteins implicated in Alzheimer's disease. And researchers have figured out that if you develop antibodies that antibodies they have developed against that virus appear to be effective against Alzheimer's disease. So doing research in mice, they've taken mice who have that amyloid beta protein associated with Alzheimer's disease, and they've injected these mice with this protein that was developed to be an antidote to this potato blight, and sure enough, it's killing the Alzheimer's protein in the mouse brain. So what we're saying here is that a potato virus and the treatment that we've developed in response to a potato virus could hold the cure for Alzheimer's disease. Now, Stephen, this, I think, as well as anything you could possibly point out, is just a fantastic example of what we were talking about last week on the idea of Spock's chessboard.
Exactly.
The idea.
See, we had, you know, it's absolutely impossible for even the smartest and most plugged-in person to say what will be the total consequence of any development even they make. Okay, I mean you learn something about potato viruses and all of a sudden it becomes the answer to some human disease. I'm sure the people that were working on the potato viruses had had no clue that that's where that research would take them. But you know.
Right. Yeah, I mean they're doing good work. They're doing something important. They're working
right.
on developing a treatment for a potato blight, and so potatoes.
Oh, so we can have plenty to eat, which is very important
yeah.
part. But I'm sure they had no clue that it would lead to a treatment for disease in humans.
Yeah, the idea that it could lead to a treatment for any human disease, much less something as catastrophic and something that we would so dearly like to be able to do something about as much as Alzheimer's disease is just astounding to me. And you start to multiply that by, you know, all the things that we're just now beginning to understand. If we just realize today that, you can apply a little bit of what we've done in potato blight research and apply it to fighting Alzheimer's disease and realize all the different areas of research that are going on, all the different things that people are learning, all the different things that people are developing, and how each of these can be applied in different ways, there are just so many ways that our world can be improved for the better. There's so many good things sitting out there, you know, ready to change our world in ways that we can't even imagine.
Last week, Michael Darling pointed to a TED Talk by Sirkin Robinson. And at the beginning of that talk, he says, they were in the middle of this conference, and he says, I've just been impressed throughout this conference by the amount of human creativity that's what this conference seems to have focused on is the how creative humans can be. And he says, but that's led to the situation where nobody has any clue how, you know, what's going to happen next. And so he says, really, the skill that needs to be taught is creativity. It's as important as literacy, is what he was arguing. And I thought it was a profound point, and I appreciate Michael Darling bringing it out last week.
And, I think the point there is absolutely right. If we're going to capitalize on the environment that we're in, this rapidly changing environment, this what I describe as this rapidly changing, rapidly improving world, it's going to take, above all, creativity just to make these connections, just to be able to make the leap from potato virus to Alzheimer's, and whatever, multiply that by a thousand other possible eurekas that are waiting to happen.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm now getting these links in there. I think people are seeing links now. Is that right?
Yeah, I see a link.
One of them got in there anyway.
Yeah, one.
See, this one does. Well, I can only do one link at a time. Anyway,
yeah.
Folks in the chat room, if you want to go to the Speculist, and the links are there. If you're looking for good news stories, so that's my initial pick. Stephen, do you have one you want to talk about?
Well, let's go to your latest one. Anything into oil. Now, you included a truly disgusting picture in that story.
Thank you.
It is pretty gross. So if you're sitting there munching on some popcorn listening to the show, put your popcorn aside, and if you're going to look at this picture. What it is
I will say that you don't know it's disgusting until you read it. Because
yeah.
If I was just looking at that, I would have no idea what I was seeing.
Okay, well, it's Turkey
Slaughterhouse.
I would guess
it's probably gross. Yeah, but...
Yeah. And
it's—I
mean—and not just fresh turkey slaughterhouse waste. This is putrid, rotting turkey slaughterhouse waste. Being turned into gasoline and actually high quality oil. They're talking about the world's worst stuff: slaughterhouse waste, municipal sewage, old tires, mixed plastics. Pretty much anything, can be made into this oil with this process that they're developing. And I mean, they back up a truck there and get out the oil. Now, apparently, this oil that they're producing with this waste has to be mixed half and half with crude from the ground in order to be used. I'm not exactly sure why, but the story itself is pretty awesome, and particularly with gas prices the way they are. So,
yeah, it's a favorite of mine. One of the things I like about this one is that what's the driver here? There's two drivers. I only wrote about one in the Better All the Time feature, but there's really two drivers here. One is our need for energy. Well, that's going to go on, and the other one is our tendency to produce waste.
Yeah.
Well,
you can bet on that.
Not going anywhere either. So if you can, you make those two things meet in a happy way. It just seems like that's a great example of synchronicity of making.
You're taking
lemons and you make lemonade.
Yeah. Well, it's worth. I mean, it's better than that. Lemons are pretty cool by themselves. I'll take lemon and slice it up and put it in my water. But here you're taking something that has negative value. This gross stuff that you pretty much want to dig a pit and throw it in and cover it up and hope nobody finds it,
You just want to be rid of it. Absolutely.
Yeah, you just want it out of sight and out of mind. But instead, taking something completely negative like this and turning it into a complete positive, that is a cool story. So it's my favorite of the stories that were in the Better All the Time from this week.
Okay, great. Well, let's continue with that theme. And first, I think I need to say that this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're talking about evidence that the world is getting better all the time. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can join us on the online chat or give us a call at 347-215-8972. And now I'm clicking around. I got to get back to the one I wanted to talk about. Here it is. Continuing with that same theme, so we talked about a potato blight, a nasty little thing, which has led to a treatment for it, which then led to potentially a treatment for Alzheimer's. We talked about disgusting turkey guts potentially providing oil. So continuing with the same theme, something that you don't want, something that you would just absolutely like to be rid of, turning out to have a positive application. How about this headline? Growing new ear hairs can boost hearing. And
awesome.
That's a... Well, as I pointed out on a personal note, this was right around my birthday. I'm not exactly old yet, but if there's an upside to growing ear hair, okay, I'm
you're all for that. Huh?
Yeah,
that's right.
I frankly was not seeing an upside to that before I read this.
Obviously, we're talking about inner ear hair here, inside the ear canal, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's talking about gene therapy on mouse embryos to grow hair cells with the potential to reduce hearing loss in adult animals. They actually are sensory hair cells inside the cochlea that give you the ability an improved ability to hear. The thing is, at birth we have about 30,000 hair cells which can be damaged throughout our lives by infections and aging and genetic diseases. And yes, the puffy gray stuff that comes out of old guys' heads is not in and of itself going to improve anybody's hearing. I mean, you may have noticed that people who are growing visible ear hair are not necessarily the people with the sharpest hearing in the world. But the basic ability to grow that is then in place. And what they've done is they've implanted I believe it was a gene called ATOH1 in the inner ear of the mouse, and that has coaxed non-sensory cells to become hair cells. So if you can grow hair at all, you can grow the kind that helps you to hear. At least you can with mice. And as we like to assume, you know, things that seem to work well for mice, by and large, work well for us. So the fact that people can grow hair in their ears as they get older, if you modify that slightly, you tweak that just by one gene, suddenly you have the ability to restore hearing to people who've lost it or whose hearing has been significantly damaged. And again, it's using something that we wouldn't normally think of as being a tremendously beneficial thing to have, hair in our ears, but there it is.
Well, you know, it's losing hearing as one gets older. It's a very isolating thing. The older people I know that are losing their hearing to the point, you know, I have a few friends who are older who they have a hard time hearing higher pitched voices, and so they like visiting with me. You know, I mean, if ever they, you know, they're out and they see me, they like talking with me because they can hear me. I have a lower pitched voice, but it gets to the point where they don't want to be in crowded rooms because it just sounds like a roar, and higher pitched voices, they just can't hear them. I mean, no matter how loud you talk, if you have a high pitched voice, they can't hardly hear it. So I mean, this is just a wonderful thing for these people. So yeah,
absolutely,
it's very good.
It's terrifically helpful thing, and I think that's a really good point. It's just a quality of life issue. My own dad has developed some hearing loss over the last year or so, and actually, just hearing aid technology has been tremendously helpful for us. And you know, and when we can get him to wear it, that seems to help quite a bit too. But I've noticed that he's more interested in wearing it just because there is this ability to connect with other people if you can hear them, and I think that's what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Which you know is just part of the just challenges and difficulties that we normally associate with aging, and that we're all in favor, of course, on at the Speculist and on this program for finding ways of working past all those things. And this
exactly.
looks like yet another way of doing that.
Exactly.
All right, go ahead.
It's a story you haven't covered in A Better All the Time, to my knowledge, Phil, but I kind of wanted to bring it in. It's sort of a more of a development. See if you would consider it a Better All the Time story. I'm talking about cloud computing. Now, what I mean by that is the sort of computing where it doesn't matter what physical machine you're using, you still have access to your data, the programs you use. And I guess great examples of early forms of cloud computing are blogging. You know, it doesn't matter what machine I pick up. I can blog at the Speculist and write stories at the Speculist, regardless of what machine I pick up. Podcasting with Blog Talk Radio, it really doesn't matter what machine I'm using. I can podcast, with Blog Talk Radio. Web-based email and other web applications. I remember our efforts to use Writely to jointly write a project or two, Phil. But that's that was purchased by Google, and they're trying to make it a better system.
That evolved into Google Documents.
That's
and
right.
Now that is a much more usable implementation of that idea, and it is much more in the cloud now that I think than it was following that that whole paradigm of there's my word processor sitting out there in Google land someplace, and I can get to it from this laptop, or I can get to it from my computer at work, or I can go over and use my wife's Mac, or I can get on an iPhone, right, wherever I am,
right.
I can get to that application, whatever sets of interfaces I'm using, that thing is sitting there in the cloud and it's available to me.
And one thing that this is allowing is the development of smaller and smaller machines to access the internet with. You don't necessarily have to have all your processing power locally. If you're dealing with the cloud, all you really need to do is be able to touch the cloud. And instead of having full-fledged laptops, people are carrying around new smaller machines, less powerful machines by and large, that are called netbooks. That's what the category is called, and examples of that could be the one laptop per child machine, Intel's Classmate, the Is it the ASUS EPC? And other examples like that. So anyway, that is one way I think that really the internet's getting better all the time, is to allow us to carry our data with us. If for example our laptops are destroyed or something, a laptop is destroyed, well, you just pick up the next machine and you still have, and you're able to pick right up. It's a great idea. I ran into a service that I thought was pretty cool. It's called Steam. Have you heard of it?
No, I have not.
Okay, Steam is a let's get down to nitty gritty here. This is the this is where the cloud gets important. It's video games, okay?
Oh, okay. Well, finally,
It's the internet cloud for video games. Basically, if you log on to Steam, you give them you create an account there, and you buy a video game that you would normally go to the store to buy. And you can download it to that machine, or you can download it to any other machine that you happen to use. And so, you play it. You could delete it from your machine if your hard drive gets full, and still have access to it later. It's that's cloud computing for video games, and I think it's a brilliant concept.
Now, is GameTap the same kind of idea, or?
You know, Michael, are you aware of that, or anybody in the chat room? Because I have not used GameTap.
Well, I haven't used it, but that was my understanding. It was GameTap is this place where you can go play all these different old arcade games and even new current games, and it's all just there sitting in the web. But I could be wrong. But if it does work that way, it's the same idea.
Yeah. Yeah, but this one that I'm aware of is called Steam. And you could Google Steam games if you're interested, but I think that's where computing is going in the near future. So it's a pretty cool idea.
All right. Well, let's move on to some more good news. Actually, I'm going to ask Michael to tell us what's going on in the chat room. Any good news originating amongst our listeners?
Sally has been throwing some ideas out. And nothing I would disagree with, and I suspect you guys as well. For example, the continued, I won't say miniaturization, but the shrinkage of actual computing devices and their increased computational capability, even though they keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Who could disagree?
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. That's a good one. What else?
Harvey is saying the kids and I like Lego Star Wars. This particular service, Harvey, it has all kinds of games, including various Lego games. So yeah, check it out if you're interested.
All right. Well, I've got another example of a good news story. This one is a real departure from the others, but not completely. This one I put under the heading of Hello Kitty, and the headline here was Lost Cat Returned Home After 9 Years, and I'll just read a little of the Reuters story here. I think this is just one of those great little human interest stories. I mean, typically, if you were ever going to see a good news story in the mainstream media, it would be something like this. Okay, Kitty came home, right? So, it said a couple been reunited with their missing cat after 9 years. The RSPCA said Wednesday. Dixie, a 15-year-old ginger cat, disappeared in 1999, and her owners thought she had been killed by a car. She was found less than half a mile from her home in Birmingham after a concerned resident rang the animal charity to report a thin and disheveled cat who'd been in the area for a couple of months. RSPCA Animal Collection Officer Alan Pitway checked her microchip and confirmed it was Dixie. She was returned to her owners, Alan and Jilly Delaney, within half an hour. Now, here's what's cool about this story. For one thing, it is just a good old-fashioned...
Oh,
the cat came home story, which is
right.
Sweet. And there's a great picture of the lady with her cat reunited, and you go, oh, that's just awesome. And you think after 9 years, what were the chances you'd ever see this cat again? Well, what were the chances they'd ever see this cat again? The cat did its part by getting back into the neighborhood and being very near to its original home, but had not found its way back home. And what was it that got it the rest of the way home? You take the cat to the RSPCA, and bingo, there's a chip. It's like the microchip, which was registered, is the little bit of information technology that got added to this story that finally enabled this reunion to happen. So this is a cat reunion. This is a happy pet reunion story that may not have happened in the past. And the reason it might not have happened is because the technology wasn't there to allow the cat to get that extra 2.5 blocks home. That cat might have been turned over to the RSPCA without the chip. They might have found a home for it, or might have sadly had to eventually put it down. But Dixie would never have made it home were it not for that last little bit, like 2-block distance to get back to her home. And the way that was made possible was through computer technology.
Well,
now,
right.
How
could
anyone argue that the world's getting better all the time?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think what's interesting here is this. You know, obviously, this computer chip is better in that sense than even a pet tag. I mean, you know, a low tech solution like that, because, you know, 9 years into this cat having been lost, the chip was still present with the cat, whereas the cat would have lost a tag long before. You know,
right?
The cat was taken to the vet or wherever. So, that's part of what makes it superior to something low tech like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just a terrific story about how a little bit of technology provides a huge benefit. And there are probably hundreds of these stories. You never hear them. Thousands probably of people who are reunited with their pets because of these chips. This is just a really dramatic one, so you hear about it because it was after a 9-year separation. But it goes again to quality of life. Whereas before we would have had to have given up on being reunited with these animals, now we put the chips in. And I think, you know, as often as not, people do get reunited with their pets because they're able to locate whose pet it was. So it's
Sally mentioned something that seems pretty obvious. Why not, what's the next step? A GPS chip. So that you can look on your iPhone or whatever and you say, oh, my cat's out, you know, wandering the neighborhood. I see it on this little map here. And you go pick up your cat, you know.
It'll be Google Pets and Google, and Michael's saying Google Kids, right? You just go into Google and you put in your kid's name and then the map will come up and it'll show where your kid is. I think it'll be overlaid onto a satellite image of that address. And you can even get directions for how to get from where you are to where your cat is or your
kid.
Child is.
Or yeah, that's right.
Something like that. Absolutely. All right. Well, we're winding down here. I guess we have time for maybe one or two more of these. Stephen, do you have another favorite good news story from the last few Better All the Times?
Well, let's see here. Large Hadron Collider actually worked. Well, I mean, I think we actually had gotten some bad news in the last couple of days. It looks like it's going to be down for a couple of months. But these are small setbacks. The thing is, they tested it, and the initial test, it was working properly, which means that by and large, after they shake out these small things, we're going to have a huge collider that will allow us to, you know, uncover some of the remaining secrets of the universe. So, very cool thing.
The story kind of reminds me a little bit of remember when Hubble kicked off, right?
Right, right. Hubble needed glasses, you know.
Yeah.
Once we got a Hubble a contact lens, you know, we really saw how useful it turned out to be. I think that's kind of, you know, we're in the initial stages initial shakedown, and once we solve these few problems, it'll be awesome. So
cool. And there was this huge furor when this outcry, if you'll recall, when Hubble didn't work, right? This, oh, we spent all this money, we put this thing up there, it's a fiasco, it's a boondoggle, we've wasted all this money. And it did need repairs, and it did have to be repaired. But can you imagine what our view of the universe would be without Hubble? You think of the insight that it has given us into what the universe looks like, what distant objects look like, what parts of the sky that we've always thought were familiar, but now we've got this intensely improved view of it from Hubble. I mean, you know, the skeptics were proved wrong, you know, a bazillion times over, I think, with Hubble. There's no comparison. It's one of the greatest investments in science, I think, that has ever been made. And I think that
it's gone so far beyond what was thought to be its useful life too. I mean, it's the gift that keeps on giving, and even now it's continuing to work long after it was supposed to have. We were supposed to have lost even the ability to control it, you know.
Absolutely, and I think the Large Hadron Collider is going to prove equally useful and equally important to us over time. And I've got this quote from Stephen Hawking. He had been quoted as saying that, you know, not only is it not going to destroy the world, it's one of the keys to saving us. And here's a quote from Stephen Hawking. He says, "Both the LHC and the space program are vital if the human race is not to stultify and eventually die out. Together they cost less than 0.1% of world GDP." And then this is he's getting a little
together
here.
Yeah.
"If the human race cannot afford this, then it doesn't deserve the epithet human." So he's talking about the human imperative right there, which we talk about on this program from time to time, which is that we're always reaching out, we're always expanding our boundaries, and changing what it means to be human, changing what our understanding of the world is, and changing how we interact with the world is. And I think that Stephen Hawking has keyed into that with this quote. He's saying the space program, this advanced particle physics, and you can throw Hubble in there too, because that lent so much to our just visual understanding of the universe, that these things are important to taking us to the next stage.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's my last one. Did I do that one, or did you do that one?
Yeah, you did it. I think we've got so much with Better All the Time that we ought to make just plan to do a part two next week, Phil.
Okay, you want to do that? We can pick it up next week, and that way also we can do another coffee mug competition. We'll ask our listeners, those who are on live with us now, and those who listen to the podcast recording, to start thinking about your own ideas for good news stories, and whoever contributes the best good news story is going to get one of our Fast Forward Radio coffee mugs. And in fact, everyone who contributes a story that I use in the next Better All the Time will get a coffee mug, put it that way. So,
Michael Darling is asking, Michael, are you there, about the word stupefied? That is the word he used. That's the word Hawking used.
Stultify was that.
Stultify, yeah, that was it.
Yeah, stult, not stoop, stult. So, okay, so everyone be putting, get your feelers out, be looking for good news. We're going to have a competition next week, and everyone is going to give us an idea. And yes, if Senator Obama submits an idea for Better All the Time, or McCain, they're both eligible for this. This is a completely separate competition. Everyone can enter, except for you and Stephen, you and Michael. You can't enter, of course, but... and I can't, but...
Of course, if they enter the contest, either of them enters the contest, that also will probably win them the other contest, too, so...
Good point.
Yeah.
You know, they'll end up winning, too. And wouldn't it be great if they won, too, and shared one of them with the other one? Wouldn't that just be a great
bipartisan moment.
The cat came home kind of a feeling, you know, you'd get from that kind of a story. I'm getting all misty just thinking about it. Okay, so... what do we got music-wise this evening?
The name of the band is Modern Science. How's that for a band name?
I like it, Modern Science.
Yeah. The title of the song is Every Little Thing.
Every Little Thing by Modern Science. This is not the old Police song, Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. It's a different
song. No, this is a completely different song.
A different Every Little Thing. All right. Well, we'll look forward to listening to Every Little Thing. We're going to look forward to seeing Every Little Thing about this program in your show notes, Stephen, and thank you so much for your contributions this evening. Michael, thanks to you and to all our friends in the chat room and to everyone listening. We look forward to being with you again on the next Fast Forward Radio. Good night.
Yes.